Well, hello and happy new year, and thank you for attending tonight's class on LinkedIn. I'm Tracy of Pink Pigeon Media, and I manage social media pages for small businesses, Facebook pages, LinkedIn, Twitter, and other pages for people just like you so that they can go on about the business of doing their business while I tend to their social pages and then report on any connections that are made and just overall manage those pages. So tonight's class is on LinkedIn. And if you do have a computer in front of you, that's certainly helpful. It's not absolutely mandatory to get anything out of this class, but it might be helpful for you to look at your page as we talk. And there will be a time for question and answer at the end of the session. So if you want to jot things down as they come to your mind, do that. I also received some of your questions in advance. And so maybe something that you sent is on this list in front of me. So I'll run through some answers to those questions at the end as well. So very first thing about LinkedIn is that one of the reasons I like it so much is that it is the absolute social media hotspot for professional connections to be made. It is an online social network for business professionals designed specifically for that purpose. It's different than other social sites that you use, like Facebook in particular, because it's designed for professionals for finding jobs, discovering sales leads, for posting jobs that you need to fill, for connecting with business partners. And as you all know, Facebook is really about making friends, sharing with family, posting photos and videos. It's really kind of a playground, whereas LinkedIn is specifically for professionals like you to make connections. It's, as you know, its layout and its pages look different, but it functions in very much the same way in the sense that you connect with people and you can read their news feed and see what people are up to. It's just on a professional level. So the most important reasons to me to see a coach using LinkedIn kind of comes down to three very essential things. The first thing is that LinkedIn has an impeccable reputation, and that this is not just with people, with professionals who love it and find it to be a very profitable social site, but also with search engines. Search engines love LinkedIn, and it's because it's so reputable and so highly regarded that they just love it. So using it is in your best interest, even if for no other reason than to tickle Google's fancy because they like it so much. It's popular enough, in fact, that when you Google somebody's name, a professional that you're trying to find, chances are their LinkedIn profile will rank it at second, third, or maybe fourth on the first page of a Google search. So that's how powerful LinkedIn is and why I think coaches should definitely use it. Another one of the reasons is that LinkedIn provides this opportunity to make connections that you really just might not make in person. You just might never, ever meet this person or group of people or a big, huge group of people that share the same interest or profession or industry all together in one place where they're sharing relevant information that's helpful to you, where you can also share relevant information. So those are really the reasons why you should use it. And because it is so user-friendly, if you're familiar with Facebook, then you're going to find LinkedIn in a lot of ways. It's a snap. And yes, it's different. There are different nuances, but it's the same thought process that goes into using it. Facebook is far more simplified. You can do more with LinkedIn because you are doing some professional things in there, but the basic premise is the same. With LinkedIn, everyone that you connect with, those are known as your connections, and lots of connections on LinkedIn is a good thing for coaches. I don't want to say lots of connections is necessarily a good thing across the board. I don't know every industry, so I can't speak to every industry. I don't know if certain things might be tailored differently, but for coaches, lots of connections is a really good thing. And this is an interesting thing to note with LinkedIn, is that you may connect with something, with someone that you might think would have nothing whatsoever to do with your particular niche in coaching. However, when you make a connection with that person, others can see all of his or her connections. So someone who would be a good fit for you, who knows the connection you just made, also sees you. So it's this domino effect. So you may not score a client with that direct connection, but they might see you as a linked connection and still find you that way. So it's just a very powerful tool in that respect, and part of why it's so loved by professionals. And when you're making connections, one of LinkedIn's terms of use states that you're only to connect with people that you, and on the safer, this is a good bit of information to have, what I'm about to say, for people who are just starting out. It's good for everybody to know, but if you're just starting out and you don't even really know where to start in making connections, it's a good thing to do to start with your base know and love and trust, because you know and love and trust them. And so that's a really great place to start, which means your email list, perhaps, list of people you've worked with before and know where your people are, and you know who comes to mind to look up right away. And this may be, depending on what you're doing in your coaching practice, this may be a wide enough net to cast. And if it is, then you can certainly start there and start working with that base of people. What I found, though, is that LinkedIn policy of only connecting with people that you know and trust kind of is restricting, because you want to coach people that you don't even know. I mean, how do you connect with these people you don't even know that need your coaching? Basically, this isn't about trying to connect with people you already know. You're attempting to reach people you don't know. So while that's a great place to start, it would not be my recommendation that you stop there unless you just know oodles and oodles and oodles and oodles of people to connect with, and that's going to keep you busy forever. But if you want to cast a wider net, which is probably what most of us want to do, we're going to find that policy to be too limiting. So you're going to want to make connections that's going to number in hundreds, if not thousands, of people. For those who want those huge numbers, you can consider becoming what LinkedIn calls a lion. And lion is L-I-O-N. It stands for LinkedIn Open Networker. And basically, in a nutshell, a lion is a LinkedIn user who connects with just about anyone on LinkedIn who says they want to connect. They may know them, they may not, they may trust them, they may not, but the point is to gain huge numbers of connections so that people you're connected with can see who you're connected with, can see who you're connected with, so you've got the domino effect of exposure. And you can often spot other LinkedIn users who are considered lions if they have like 500 or more connections, that they're probably a lion. That's not always true, but it's often true. And to be a lion is very simple. It's not like, you don't have to join a club or do anything special. You can start by putting the words LinkedIn Open Networker throughout your profile and the acronym LION throughout your profile. You can put it at the bottom of your profile in the contact preferences section, and you can say something as simple as, I'm a LinkedIn Open Networker, aka LION. Connect with me using my email address right here, and then you give them your email address. And your LinkedIn summary can contain the words stating that you're a lion. LinkedIn policy says that you are not to put that in your headline. So where I would have Tracy Ray, Pink Pigeon Media, it's not acceptable to put L-I-O-N there. Now, lots of people do it. You'll see it on LinkedIn. It's there. And I think some people probably are still doing it. Perhaps they just don't realize that the policy changed back in 2013. Maybe they're just stragglers and they just haven't cleaned it up yet, or they're stubborn because they believe it needs to be there and they don't care what LinkedIn says. I mean, it is in some people's headlines, but that's the policy is not to do that. So I would suggest that you stick with the rules with that. However, there are some top networking groups that you can join right away to help you boost your connections no matter where you are in your LinkedIn process, whether you're brand new and just starting to get your profile built out, which I'll talk about in a second, or you've been on there for a while and you're just kind of polishing it off, trying to figure out what to do with it. There are top network or groups that you can join right away that will help you boost your connections. And you might want to jot these down. They're actually websites that you can visit. Now, three of these websites I'm about to say are a membership that you purchase. I think it's something like $10 for 6 months or something like that. It's close. I'm in the ballpark anyway. And then one of them is free to join. It's the one that is free is Lion, L-I-O-N, 500, the number 500.com, Lion500.com. That one's the freebie. The other three that you can check into, and they all look really good and would probably be well worth your time. One is TopLink, TopLinked.com, TopLink. That's a paid subscription or a membership is probably the better word, TopLinked.com. Another is OpenNetworker.com, OpenNetworker.com, and they are also a membership site. And InvitesWelcome.com, InvitesWelcome.com, InvitesWelcome.com. And I can repeat those later for anybody who'd like to make sure they've got it right. Now, to sum that little part up, it really comes down to this. It's a good idea to, I hate to say this, to go against LinkedIn policy. It really is, to accept all the connection requests that you get. Unless there's some sketchy reason that you're uncomfortable with, go ahead and accept the connection requests that you get. I mean, this is quite different from Facebook in that we may have some really good reasons for not accepting a friend request. There can be about a bajillion reasons why you might not want to do that. And Facebook tends to be more personal. But on LinkedIn, the more people in your network, the more opportunities you have to show up in someone else's connection list. And it does come down to that. And you want to be found. And that's one way that that happens, is so-and-so is connected to you and finds you because they saw that you were connected to this other person that they know. It's just those. That's just the way that we make those connections. So the more that you have, really the better that it is. So it does go against LinkedIn policy, but it's a great way to go to get that connection number up. It's very important to do that. Also, you'll want to utilize LinkedIn's provision for adding your email accounts. And you've already probably encountered this, that when you allow LinkedIn to access your email account, then you can pick and choose whom you want to include to request to connect from that list. It's not like it sends an invite to everybody. You still get to pick and choose. But that's another great place to start, is to make sure that you've covered everybody in your email account that already exists that you would like to be sure that you connect with on LinkedIn. And I want to say something about, again, I am going to talk about your profile in a second, and you think that's where I'd start, but I wanted to cover a couple little straggling ideas that you may, if you're already a LinkedIn user, you may have wondered about those things. So getting a lot of connections is really top of mind. No matter how well your profile is filled out, you want to start making connections. I want to say something about endorsements, and you've seen this. If you're using LinkedIn, you've seen where you can endorse or be endorsed someone else's skill set. And I want to say that this is a very interesting thing, that you might think that getting all the endorsements in the whole wide world about everything is great for you, but it's really not. You really want to be only endorsed for something that's truly accurate about you and your brand and your particular niche in coaching, because you don't want a lot of people coming to you for something that you don't do. They'll get frustrated and you'll get frustrated. You really need your endorsements to be spot on. So if somebody does, in kindness and well-meaning, endorse you for something that's not a fit and really not your area of expertise and the place that you wouldn't necessarily be comfortable, then you can not have that endorsement by clicking on the X and getting it off your list. And I would suggest that you do that. You don't want to cloud your own mission or your own vision for your practice in the minds of your LinkedIn connections with endorsements that aren't really true to you, no matter how well-meaning. So I would make sure that you check on your endorsements frequently to see. You probably get email alerts. I do. I've got mine set to get email alerts, but if you don't, just double check those endorsements on occasion to be sure that there's not something out there that's truly not the best fit for you. And the same thing for you, when you endorse somebody, it may seem obvious to say, but sometimes when we really want to help somebody out and we mean well and we think that we know that they do this thing well, but maybe we don't know for sure, you really need to stick with what you know that person knows before you endorse them. If you have a fellow coach that's just brilliant in relationship coaching, then endorse that. But don't endorse them as a financial coach if that's not what they do. Just keep that as true to, and if you don't know, just, you know, talk to them if they're a friend and find out so that you can do them a favor and endorse them properly. Of course, they can always reject the endorsement, so it's not like, you know, it's a big, huge deal, but you do want to be true to form. So let's talk about your profile for a minute. As your starting point, no matter where you are with LinkedIn, whether you are just starting or been in there for a while, visiting and revisiting your profile is a good idea from time to time to be sure that you're shining the way that you want to. And the first thing that you keep in mind is that because LinkedIn is a professional network, it is a little more tightly buttoned up than a whole lot of other social networks out there like Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. All those things are much more of a sandbox. You play there. This is professional, so there is a certain amount of that you've got to keep in mind, that you want to use the words that make the most sense for your professional network. And being playful is great, but you have to keep in mind that you also want to be professional. So my advice is to always let yourself shine when filling out your profile. Let your personality is a selling point. It's a professional network, but your personality is part of what makes a good coach a good coach. That's what you're bringing to the table. So in a professional manner, you still shine like a light bulb. You want to make sure that people see your smile coming through and see your warmth coming through and that thing that makes you the special coach that you are, while maintaining that level of professionalism that people are also looking for in a coach. So let that be the thing when you're going in there to look at your profile. Let that be topmost in your mind. It's just, who am I? How can I be the best person and present that best person full of personality right here on my LinkedIn page? And I would say that utilize at this point your LinkedIn new banner image space that's at the top. It's a new thing that LinkedIn's added, and you've probably noticed it if you've logged in recently. If you're in there now, there's a little picture of a camera at the top of your page, and it tells you that you've got this new real estate to play with where you can insert an image or your tagline or whatever it is you want to do. And that's a great place to let your personality shine. By using an image or a tagline, maybe you have a certain phrase that you say. Your image allotment for that size is a 1400 by 425 pixels. And you want to make sure that that image that you choose is very high resolution. I mean, it's certainly the first thing somebody sees when they go to your profile is going to be that nice big picture that you're adding there. And so while you're creating that picture, and it's not something you have to rush into, and you may even want to have a graphics artist do it for you if you're not real comfortable with creating that sort of thing. But the thing you want to ask yourself about this picture as you're creating it is, how can I use this banner space to communicate my coaching expertise and how good I am at that? You want people to want to connect with you. So think about what that image might be. Is it you laughing? Maybe it's a nature shot, because that really is the heart and soul of who you are, getting back to nature, whatever it is. And consider also including a call to action in that banner space area. Again, you can add text to images, whether you want to do it yourself using any number of online tools like PicMonkey or something like that. You can upload an image and add text. You would like a call to action on that, something like connect with me or let's connect, something that causes a person to want to click on the connect button and send you an invitation to connect with them. A call to action, as you already well know, is Marketing 101. You want people to have something to do when they get there. And you have that new space, that new banner space that you can use for that. Call to action. Another thing to keep in mind about your profile as you fill it out is that you can reorder your profile page by clicking the it's an up or down arrow symbol. It's in one little box in the upper right-hand corner of each section. You click on it, and it's literally drop and drag. And I was playing with it earlier this week, and it really is. You just drop it and drag it. You can move things all around, and things don't have to be. You don't have to have education at the bottom. If that's important to you, move it up. Publications, anything that you've been published in, you can move those things all around on your page and put them in the order that are most important to you. And for everybody, that may be something different. But it's good to know that you've got the ability to do that. You can use your profile, too, to repurpose content that you've used elsewhere. And this is really cool because if you've got some really great articles that you've written that you have published in other places, you can use LinkedIn to kind of house those articles. And this is just a good way to repurpose things that you're proud of. And you can, again, you can move those things to the top of your page if that's important to you for people to see. Make connections using business cards that you collect at events, too. And this is, I love this idea because if you are someone who networks a lot or shakes a lot of hands in the course of a week or a month and you do collect business cards and make collect connections that way, make sure that you request business cards and that it has email addresses on them, because then when you go to LinkedIn later, you can simply go to their profile, click connect, and then click other when it pops up and says, how do you know this person? Because, again, it's LinkedIn policy. They want you to know people. They're asking you to confirm that you know people. You can enter their email address and then include a personal message there if you'd like to. And then the beauty of that is you can just toss the business card. You don't have to keep up with all those business cards anymore if you're still doing that. This is a great way to have that information just by linking to them on LinkedIn. You've got more information on LinkedIn than you have on a business card, basically. So no more need to hang on to those cards, but it's a great way to build up more connections. In filling out your profile, I have found that over the years that I've used LinkedIn, that I visit it every 6 months or so and just make a little change here, a little addition there. I get more comfortable with it, so I insert more personality with it. And I will get braver as I peruse LinkedIn and see what other users have done. There are some people out there with some really kicky and fun, very professional but kicky and fun LinkedIn pages where they use verbiage that is germane to their industry, and yet they've added a bit of their personality. And the more that I do that and seek those people out to find interesting LinkedIn profiles, the more brave I become in my own. And I would encourage you to do that too, because, you know, while you don't want to go way overboard because it is a professional network, you do want it to be eye-catching and you want it to be entertaining enough for people to keep reading. And I would say this when making connections, because this is all about making connections. Everything on your profile is about making someone want to connect with you. When I send connections to people, I always make them personal. I will say their name in it. If I remember where I met them, I will say that. If I have never met them, I will say, we've not met, but your profile is right up my alley. I enjoyed reading. I'll try to do something to make it personal. Now, I understand that if you're diving in and doing a lot at one time, it might behoove you to write a generic yet personal sounding invitation so you can copy, cut, and paste something that's different than that generic canned one that LinkedIn provides to you when you make a connection, because that one's just nothing. It's just a canned response, and you don't want to use that. So you might want to come up with something pretty, just a nice generic but personal sounding, so it's your voice when you make those connections. I would like to say this one important thing about when you post, and someone did ask this question, and so we can cover it again in more detail if there's more that needs to be said, but posting times on LinkedIn are very different than posting times on some other networks that you might use. Facebook is pretty all over the place because people kind of check in just at all kinds of hours. And people use Instagram all day long because that's the nature of that beast. But for LinkedIn, because it's so specifically professionally oriented, there are some dead zones that are just not really very profitable for you to take your time to post. And that's really any time that's traditional work hours, which means that lunch breaks are a great time to post on LinkedIn, and early evening, like, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, when people have already had dinner and are sitting down to veg a little bit from their day, is also a good time to post. You're not going to get very far if you post at 10 in the morning with LinkedIn post or at 2 in the afternoon. And I say that with a caveat that there are some industries for which that's the perfect time. This is not a one-size-fits-all. But it's just as a blanket statement, as a general rule, noon is a good time, and early evening, like 7, 8 o'clock, is a good time on LinkedIn, and mornings are traditionally just not the greatest. And I would like to open this up for questions in just a second after I've read these questions and answered them, because it may actually answer a question that you've got on your mind, or you may have been the one who sent this question. And so you'll get my answer to this. One of the questions asked is, I am a student planning to graduate in 3 months. I have a LinkedIn account, but need serious help making it professional and to the point. What resources can help me do that? And I would like to say that, you know, LinkedIn is its best resource in that regard because it asks you very specific questions. And the key here is to make your profile robust by using keywords specific to your genre of coaching. And that's your starting point. Make a list of keywords to your specific genre or industry, and begin doing Google searches on those terms yourself to see what they uncover. And for instance, when I'm saying make a list of keywords, I think of things like if we were to use a relationship coach as a for instance, I would include words on my keyword list like couples, marriage, divorce, dating, healthy relationships, family planning, getting married. Now, I'm just pulling those out of the air as a very, very generic, but if you have a very specific niche within relationship coaching, then you're going to hone in on those words even more specifically. Maybe your coaching is very specific to divorce and recovery and remarriage and blended families. Then you're going to use those keywords, and you're going to use those keywords throughout your LinkedIn profile everywhere where they fit naturally. And I can't emphasize enough that you do not want to stuff keywords in there where they don't fit for the sake of using keywords. That's a bad thing to do and is likely to get you flagged. Flagged by who? LinkedIn, maybe another user will consider you kind of spammy or something like that. It's important to be authentic. And I say this in every module when you're using social media, that it's important to use your keywords skillfully. And by that, it means use them naturally, where they fall naturally in your writing as you're filling out your profile. But be sure that you use those keywords because not only are your readers scanning to see if you have what they need, but you've still got search engine spiders who are crawling all the time and reading your content to find out what you're about. So using keywords tells them, hey, I'm a relationship coach that specializes in blended families and divorce. That's important information because if you are not into coaching families with 10 children and that's not your niche and that's not your expertise, then you really don't want floods of people coming in looking for you to coach them to do that. So that's how you keep people coming to you that really want what you offer, is by those keywords that you pick. So sit down at some point in the following days. If you've not done so, even if you have, start a keyword list and refresh the one you may have by adding words and doing Google searches on those words to see if it uncovers anything more interesting that you've not thought of. And I want to mention this about keywords. I have on my website, pinkpigeonmedia.com, if you visit there, I have an ebook in the sidebar there that goes into depth about seeking out keywords and some really cool and quick ways to do it that won't take you hours and hours of time and that won't cost you a dime, ways to uncover keywords that could be specific to your niche that you've not even thought about. You had no idea that people were searching for you using these keywords. You may not realize that somebody out there looking for what you offer isn't using the words you would think that they would use. They're using something else, and you need to know what those words are. So if you visit pinkpigeonmedia.com, my ebook on the sidebar will help you uncover some really nuggets of gold when searching for keywords online and help you really pull together your keyword list. Keyword list is important because you need to use this in your profile. So that's how you make your profile robust, is by using keywords that are germane to your coaching practice throughout your profile as you are filling in those blanks. I think LinkedIn is your best resource because they've asked the questions that LinkedIn users want answers to. You already have the template. You just have to fill it in using the right keyword. Another question I got is, what is the ideal profile, especially now since I am in the job market but targeting three different directions? Well, now my first question that I have of the questioner is, what are the three different directions? Because depending on how different those directions are, I might steer you in a different way. My first thought is, if your three directions are very, very, very different, maybe you're over here coaching, doing relationship coaching, and that's one stream, but you also are a consultant for maybe you're a tech consultant, and maybe your third direction is that you're an expert on shoes. Those are so very different that there's no way you can streamline all these three into one LinkedIn profile. So the way I would direct you is create three different LinkedIn profiles with three email addresses that are specific to all three of your directions that you're going, and work all three if that's what you're doing. If what you can do is streamline and pull them together, maybe they're not so very different, maybe they're just three branches of one thing, I would try to consolidate my keyword list so that I'm covering those three things and then just break them down. Perhaps in my LinkedIn summary. It's just kind of hard to answer because I don't know how different your three directions are. So maybe if that caller is on the line, we could discuss that in a minute a little more in depth. Another questioner asks, I am a new relationship coach and I work for a nonprofit as an employee consultant, and I have a LinkedIn profile. So how do I balance my desires for building my private practice with my need to appear loyal to my employer? And thank you for this question, because I've been asked this numerous times. And this really may be another situation where what best would suit you would be to create a separate LinkedIn account and treat your coaching practice as a very separate thing that you do from your work LinkedIn account. And you can do that if you have that separate email address. And if you are creating a new relationship coach practice, then you may want a website that's all your own. I mean, this is your own thing that you're doing separate from. So you might want to start blogging on that website, and you might want a LinkedIn that is specific to that coaching practice. So my thought, without knowing anything more than this question, would be to create a separate thing, an entirely separate account that outlines that practice. I love this next question, and I've already touched on a little bit. It is, which LinkedIn groups are most helpful for a beginner coach who wants to build connections and gain client referrals? What information is essential and must be included when building LinkedIn business profile? And is there personal information that is best left out, like personal hobbies, dated school and employment information? When you log into your LinkedIn, you're immediately prompted with questions and suggestions for groups that you can join. This LinkedIn does by reading the keywords that it finds within your LinkedIn page, and then it will make recommendations for you. And I've found that these are pretty good recommendations if you've got the appropriate keywords in your throughout your page. And so my first thought would be to go to every one of the groups that LinkedIn is suggesting for you and join those groups. Because if you've used keywords well throughout your page, it's going to make good suggestions for you. So that's a very good place to start. And if you look at those groups and you like what you see, join them. Join every single one of them, because then you can begin making connections with people, with members of that group. That's a really great place to start. As a beginning coach, again, I would say that you want to make as many connections are as possible, because you don't need to know people to know that you can coach them. I mean, you have your process where you might have your initial meet and greet to see if you're a good connection with the free 30 minutes where you talk to this person, or however it is that you do that. But when it comes to LinkedIn, making connections everywhere is a good idea, because everybody sees everybody else's connection list, and knowing that you're a relationship coach may not be what your immediate connected person needs, but it could be somebody who's connected to them needs that. So I would begin making connections with your email list first. Go start joining groups right away and finding those people within those groups and making connections within those groups as well. And another questioner asked how to incorporate Pinterest, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And that's all the question says, so I can only answer this a little bit, thinking in my head that one thing that I do with Pinterest, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and Twitter, and all of that, is I always incorporate those social buttons on my website so that people can go and connect with me very easily from my website. So if you have a website, and I say this over and over, you should have a website, in my opinion, you'll want to include those icons that take people, when they click them, to your LinkedIn profile page, to your Facebook business page, and to your Pinterest page. And the last question that I read before this one brought up the point about a business profile page on LinkedIn. And I have used both business profile pages and personal profile pages, and I have found that for coaches, a personal profile page is a perfect fit. I don't really see a reason to build a business profile page, a business page for LinkedIn coaches. I mean, I think if you're coaching is such a personal thing anyway, so much interaction between people one-on-one, in many cases, or couples with a coach, that a profile as opposed to a business page is really better. I think it's a better fit. I don't think you're going wrong if you create a business page. I just think that a profile works great. It asks all the right questions and gives all the right information to someone looking for you. You still use keywords the same way within the body of it. So I would say fill out your profile as your coaching page. If you want to do it using a business page, it's not a wrong thing. It's not a bad thing. You could explore that and see what you like and make a decision based on what you like using the most. What is the best way to build a network on LinkedIn? How does one identify the best connections to have? I kind of think I've answered this. Once you've created a robust profile and you've joined groups and you've added all your email requests, you can join Lion, like I mentioned in the first place. Start identifying yourself as someone who's an open networker. Once you've identified yourself like that, I've certainly heard people say that the flood of connections come in. I don't do Lion, but I certainly am considering it and have for some time now. It's a way for people to claim that those connections come pouring in. So that's something I would urge you to consider for yourself. There are a couple of other questions that I kind of think that I've covered, except for this one that intrigued me: what low-cost marketing avenues are available by way of social media? Because of time, I'm going to go straight to the one thing I think you should do, and that's get an email service provider so that you can send bulk emails and newsletters to people as you connect with them. And this way you can maintain a mailing list and maintain connections by way of email, like Chipmunky, GetResponse. It's one of those things. Where you can send bulk emails and connect email addresses. It's a great way to continue to build your own strategy, your social media strategy online, which includes LinkedIn and these other social pages. But by sending emails on a regular basis, you do keep yourself in front of people more frequently. Not everybody goes to LinkedIn every day or every week. Some people check in once a month or once a quarter. There are those people, and it doesn't mean that they're not great connections to have. They still are. But you can put yourself in front of people more frequently using an email service provider. And I think that is probably one of the most powerful things you can do for yourself besides a combination of Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And so this is the last question I'll answer here, and then we'll open the line up for questions. The last question is, how do you decide how much time is optimal and efficient for social media upkeep versus falling into the black hole of time suck? And look, the reason I went into the business that I'm in with Pink Pigeon Media, managing social pages for small businesses and for coaches like yourself, was this very question. It takes time to manage these pages. And for many people, hiring someone like me to do it is just a smart way to go. I'm not full-out marketing campaign. I am a page manager to keep pages full of content that gets people clicking and keeps you before people and keeps your pages active and monitored. And this is where the time suck can go, because we all know how this goes. You get on LinkedIn and an hour later you realize you just perused 60 different profiles and you didn't have an hour spent. My thought is, I always suggest this for time management: set the timer on your iPhone or set the kitchen egg timer and make a decision. I will spend X number of minutes on my social pages this day and this day out of the week. And then just make a date with yourself and make sure that it's an appointment that you keep. It's like any time management strategy. If you set a timer, then you are more focused during that period of time. If you say, I'm going to give it 1 hour, that 1 hour you will be more focused and less likely to stray, because you know the timer's going to go off in an hour and you're done. This way it helps you to not get sucked into a black hole. And I always suggest, if you need help, hire it, because it's worth it to have your social pages active, but it's not worth it if it's sucking you dry and causing you to hate what you do for a living because you're so busy doing stuff you don't fully enjoy or really want to do. So I would suggest one of those two strategies: hire someone or set a timer and be disciplined so that you don't go off the deep end. So those are the questions that were sent to me, most of the questions sent to me. I'd like to open it up now if anybody's got any questions we can cover in the last 15 minutes of our hour. So if you want to handle that part, Amy, that would
be. Sure. For anyone that did not get the information at the beginning of the call, if you want to ask a question, you can press *6, and that will put you into a queue. And when it's your turn to ask the question, the system will announce it to you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hello.
What's your question?
Hi. Maybe you've covered this, but I didn't really. Okay, this is the problem I'm finding. The more connections I make on LinkedIn, that means that I'm getting more and more emails, more and more information about everybody, all of my connections' posts, all of their updates, and it also means that more and more people are getting information about my posts, but that means that I am just part of a long queue, just like, and I'm finding I'm reading less, and I wonder if there's like a place where you're making so many connections that nobody's really bothering with you anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think one thing is that I think if you go into your settings page in LinkedIn, you should be able to set it so that you're not getting a notice every single time in your email box, because I don't like that either. It's overwhelming. So you can go into your settings and comb through your settings in LinkedIn and be sure that you've got those things set the way that you want them so that you're only being alerted of what you want to be alerted for. The other thing, too, is that I think social media overwhelm is a reality for everybody who opens a computer these days. And you do have to make a decision how much time that you're willing to spend in there, and make a decision that you're only going to read the things that absolutely interest you the very, very most. Now, what you're talking about is having so many connections that you worry people aren't noticing you.
Yes.
The thing is that oftentimes when people are looking for people who do what you do, they go into their search box to find you, and this is where those keywords become important, because it's weeding out the people who don't have anything to do with what that searcher is searching for, and instead it pulls up the people that do have something to offer based on that keyword search. So it's still, while you're being overwhelmed and inundated, you have to keep in mind that if people are out there looking for what you do, they're going to use that search box and they're not going to probably be overwhelmed like what you're seeing. It's going to weed those people out. This is, again, why your profile really needs to be filled with the right keywords that describe you and your coaching practice so that you can be found among the sea of all the LinkedIn users. And in fact, this is true on any social media network. You need to use those words that are germane to what you are doing specifically so that you can be found by search engine spiders who will return the right result to searchers out there.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Great. Awesome.
Hi, this is Judy Cantwell in Atlanta. Actually, I have two questions. One, do you recommend a paid LinkedIn website? The other thing is that I've written mine in the third person. In other words, it doesn't say I do this and I do that. It says Judy does, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. To answer the latter question, most of the LinkedIn profiles that I've ever read do not do third person. It's this is me, this is what I do, this is what I love. But that is a personal preference. This is another thing that's not right or wrong. The most important thing for you and for all of us is that your profile reflects your personality. And if for you it feels comfortable and you're freer writing that way, then that's probably the way to do it. Like I said, the majority of people I'm connected with don't do it in the third person. It's definitely first person. That doesn't mean you have to do it that way. It is my preference, but if you like how yours reads and it's in the third person, I'm not inclined to tell you that you've done anything wrong whatsoever. My thing that I would encourage you to always do is to loosen up and lighten up and get comfortable and get cozy with your profile so that it is a great reflection of you and the you that you bring to the table. If you're funny and funky and witty, that needs to be inserted. If you're warm and fuzzy, that needs to be inserted. If you're very tightly buttoned up, that needs to be inserted, because there's a place in this world for everybody. Everybody's a puzzle piece and we all fit together. So whatever it is that you have that you're bringing to the table, that needs to shine in that profile. So if for you, third person is a great reflection and you want to communicate that way, then I would say do that. Absolutely do that and be true to yourself. Now, the first question that you asked, I'm not really sure I was understanding what you said, and you may need to ask that another way. Can you rephrase that and let me see if I can help explain?
Okay. I have a LinkedIn page, and I don't pay anything for it. But I understand that you can upgrade and subscribe or whatever, and for a monthly fee, have a LinkedIn page.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're talking about upgrading to a premium account.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't know what it was called.
Right. And when you get, there's some bells and whistles there that you would, what you want to do is when you log into LinkedIn, in the upper right-hand corner is try premium for free. And I would suggest that you do that, because when you get in there, it lists all the little bells and whistles that you get, some of which you may not think are all that great or not relevant to what you need. Some of them may be exactly what you need and will make it worth your time and your money to do that. One, like, for instance, one of the bells and whistles is that with the premium account, you can see absolutely everybody who ever looks at your profile. With the free account, you're limited to something like 8 people, and then you don't get to see 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 people. You just get to see the first 8 who've looked at your profile. So if that's information that you really want to have, you're going to have to pay for it. I think trying the premium for free is well worth your time to explore, because if those things will help you to increase those connections and build your practice, then it's worth the money to do it. And it, to me, it seems a little bit on the pricey side, but golly, if you score just 2 new clients, it's paid for it. I mean, or more than that. I mean, it's more than paid for it. So I think trying anything for free is a wonderful thing to do, and there are some really cool bells and whistles in there. So that's in the upper right-hand corner of your LinkedIn page when you log in. Click on that and try it. I think it's a 30-day free.
Thank you.
Yes.
At the moment, we don't have any questions.
Okie dokie.
If you have a question, star 6.
Well, I'd like to wrap up then. I mean, don't hesitate to star 6 in the meantime. I want to say that when it comes to keywords, I would make that my top priority, is to go away from this session knowing that you really need to hone in on the words that best describe your coaching practice, and then you need to weave them in to your LinkedIn page. That is a really great place to start. It will help you get found because people are going to use that search bar to look for you, and they're going to pull up those keywords. The tricky part of finding the right keywords is that you have to think like the searcher, the person out there who's looking for what you offer. You have to think like that person who doesn't even know you exist. And that's a really tricky thing to do. And in my ebook, I go into a lot more detail about that and how to get from A to B. But the important thing is you kind of have to crawl out of your skin and into the skin of the searcher who needs to find you and doesn't know you're there yet. How would they search for what you offer? What words would they use? And it's a little bit of mind reading, which is why making a really long list of what you think people would use and then Googling those search terms to see what you find is a very revealing thing, because it tells you what searchers are actually looking for by the pages that come up on the screen. And those keywords, the ones that you thought all along would be brilliant, may not be how people are actually searching for people like you. And you might want to tweak your thinking. So that can be it can really be a revelation when you start creating keyword lists. So that would be my top priority in going through and making a list and incorporating those words into my LinkedIn profile. And my second priority would be to begin joining groups by doing searches yourself, or groups that you would find interesting, or groups that might have something to do with your particular genre of coaching. And again, LinkedIn is going to give you great suggestions if you've used keywords well. So those would be my two top priorities for LinkedIn. So if there's no questions, are there anybody in the queue, Amy?
Hello?
Yes, we have several questions now.
Okay, great. Okay, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi there.
Perfect. Okay. I wanted to ask, do you recommend, like, for a complimentary session, do you recommend, inviting people to that through LinkedIn as a form of, like, marketing? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've worked with a number of coaches, and we actually just make that a part of the marketing strategy. We post that offer on Facebook. We tweet that offer. It's on LinkedIn. Because it's pretty standard for the coaches that I work with, that's their standard to get to know that person, to know if you're a good fit, to know if what you bring to them is going to work for them and that you can work together. It kind of takes a little bit of back and forth, as you well know. So that's a pretty standard thing, and they like the coaches I work with like to use that as a carrot. People love freebies, obviously, and 30 minutes talking with somebody who's an expert in their field is quite an attractive carrot and well worth your time. So we post this everywhere, and we post it frequently. It's not just a one-time thing either. We remind people on Facebook, don't forget. We tweet it frequently. Hey, this is what I offer. This is what you have to do to get there. We put the link back to their website where all they have to do is fill in the information, and then the coach gets back in touch with them. So, yes, you can do that on LinkedIn, and you can do that everywhere.
Got it. Okay, so I'm really new to LinkedIn and pretty new to coaching itself. And I did create my profile page and stuff, but I'm not familiar on how to use it. I'm good at making connections and endorsing people, but I'm not sure how to use it as a marketing tool as far as like where you post what. So would you, like, when you go to the home page, is that where you would, just write out, complimentary sessions available with me for the next month or something like that?
Yes, you can do that there, and I would suggest on other social profiles as well. It's a really great fit for Facebook,
okay.
But on your home page is where you share your updates. But, you know, the other thing, too, as a marketing tool, you can also post links to your blog that you do if you're a blogger, links to your website. You can include that, links to your contact page. You just cut and paste the link and put it in there, and it will post that, and you can do all of that as a marketing strategy as well.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Great. You're welcome.
Hello. I joined the call late, so I'm not sure. I think I might have even asked this question or submitted it, but if you've answered it, I didn't hear. I was wondering about, like, the number of contacts that you have. Like, I was cautioned to not – And in terms of quality, like, make sure you know the person. And I guess that's kind of where I have a challenge, because I don't, you know, people will ask to connect with me, and I might not have met them, so I'm not comfortable with that. And so
right.
I was wondering what your thoughts are about that, and as far
as
making them a contact.
Right. And, you know, caution is a great thing. I mean, I have a real caution about social media anyway. It's like I don't post very many pictures of my kids and that sort of stuff, like on Facebook, and I'm very cautious. However, when it comes to LinkedIn, I'm kind of the opposite. I connect when someone asks me to connect, and I will send an invite even if I don't know that person, because the more connections, the better on LinkedIn as a professional network. I kind of view it and treat it a little differently than Facebook, because it is specifically professional. That's not to say that creeps don't leak and lurk in all kinds of dark places on the internet. They do. They're everywhere. But I do get I get really enthusiastic with making connections and encouraging people to make lots of connections on LinkedIn. I could never in good conscience say to somebody, don't exercise prudence. If you feel uncomfortable, don't do it. Obviously, you've got to go with your gut if you're uncomfortable with something. But I encourage people to make more, not less, connections on LinkedIn. And I encourage people to keep their Facebook friends at a minimum. So I look at those as two very different social media platforms doing two very different things. Lots of connections on LinkedIn. I keep my friends circle much, much smaller on Facebook. And again, what you're comfortable with, if it makes you uncomfortable, then you need to hold back until you get comfortable. But connecting with people that you know is great. Connecting with people that they know, that's one way to stick a toe a little further out in the water. If you already know Sue and you love Sue and you have trusted and connected with Sue, you might feel comfortable connecting with a few of her connections. You see what I'm saying? So that might be a way to step a little further out into the deep without feeling like you're just launching yourself off the diving board head first. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Tracy,
excellent.
I'm looking at the profile page, and I'm wondering, like, you were talking about adding a profile, which would mean obviously a different email, that kind of thing. And then I thought I heard you kind of compare and contrast the benefit of doing a second page or trying to blend, if there are two things that are fairly close together, into your personal page.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at, like, the profile. How do you do that when the the position that you hold or whatever, there's just a small bar for it? Where would you do that? Where would you put kind of a second piece of what you do or who you are? Does that
make
sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And again, you really have to make a good logical decision. If you have two things that are just very, 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 very different, combining them on one page is not a good idea, because search engine spiders aren't going to know what to do with you. Do you sell shoes? Do you coach? Which one is it? It's the same thing with your website, even with your blog page. You can stray a little bit, but you really need to stay true to what you're doing. But I would say this, if there's just a little bit of a stray, but it is separate, you can always create in your summary area where you tell about yourself you can go into detail about that if you want. You can tell about it. Hey, I do this, but I also do this. You could take that space to do it. I'm not a big fan of trying to do more than one thing on a page, to be honest, because
right.
I do think it can be confusing. But if you can get it, if you really think it's close enough to be combined on one page, I would put that in the summary, and I would just outline it in your own words. This is what I do. This is my other thing. However it is in your personality to say that,
right.
you can include that. I'm looking at my own page. I mean, I haven't got mine ordered in a way that even uses the summary at this point. I mean, my summary is very, very short, but I think you've got more space there that you can use, a lot more space actually than what I've used in mine, where you would actually be able to go into detail and say, I do this thing A and I do this thing B. Here's how they're related or not related. But again, back to keywords. You really need to be sure that
right,
you use
right.
the right keywords that can be found ultimately.
Okay, so the summary is just as much searched as any other part of the page. I mean, it comes pretty well to the surface.
You know, everything that is a written word on a page is crawled by a search engine spider, starting from upper left, working its way down just like a human reads from left to right.
Okay.
And so it's going to get, and the thing that I have learned over the years, and of course these things are always changing, Google doesn't give up their analytics. So it's some of this is guesswork and some of this is what you've seen over time. But the search engine spiders read, the most important words are at the top, it thinks. And as it works its way down the page, these words are becoming less important. So you really want your keywords to be closer to the top of the page. But don't get me wrong, it's reading every word that's on your page.
Okay.
And like on your blog page, for instance, if you use images, a spider won't read images because it can't read pictures. But it reads the way that you labeled the picture, which is
right.
another place to
yeah.
put a keyword. So when you
okay.
save an image and then use it, you put keywords in there.
Right.
So it's reading every word. If it's a written word, spiders are reading it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for the question.
You bet.
Tracy, we still have a couple of questions. Are you okay with staying a couple more minutes?
I will stay until we're done. This is great.
Oh,
thanks for asking them.
Great.
Hi, this is Judy Cantwell. When we're talking about keywords, I wanted to ask a question. There's a section on the LinkedIn page that says skills and endorsements, and then down there it says, underneath it all says, Judy also knows about. So are those considered keywords?
Yes. Those have been pulled out. I'm not going to tell you that I'm an expert on analytics. Analytics on all of these pages is kind of a guesswork for all of us on the outside who are trying to look in. But these words are being pulled from your endorsements when people say you can do a thing, and it's pulled from the keywords that are pulled out of the content that have been written up above and all the stuff that you've written. In your summary and in your job descriptions. And this is why it may look a little odd in some ways to you, because if you worked, let's say you worked 15 years ago at a magazine like I did, I worked as a senior editor at a magazine. That's not what I do now, but I've still got that job listed on my LinkedIn profile. LinkedIn reads that and uses that editor keyword as one of the words that it's compiled down here in the bottom. So now I'm known as an editor. Now, for that to not happen, I would need to have taken out my magazine editor experience, you see, and then that would remove those keywords from that list and it wouldn't show up down there at the bottom. The only reason I know about this, Tracy also knows about, like what you're seeing, is because of my job listings in the past. If you were to go all the way back to your first job out of high school, it would pull that out of there and list it there. Maybe you were, a waitress or something. It would say you also know about waitressing because you included it. And it won't do this if you don't include it, because it's just pulling those words out. And this is the this is the analytics doing that. This is not a human out there reading your stuff and making a decision. This is all the machine working to pull these words out of your profile and out of your job experience and your education experience.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. That's a great question. I hadn't had anybody ask me that before about how those get there. That's a good question.
So my question was actually a similar one that's already been asked. I do, I've been a counselor and have a small therapy practice still, and I'm growing out the coaching business and have both those things listed on my LinkedIn. And I'm wondering kind of how to handle that. Is it better to just have a LinkedIn page for the coaching or to differentiate between the two on the LinkedIn page and explain when you come to one and what the other one is, or what do you recommend there?
Okay, so what are the two that you have on the table? You have a coaching practice and?
A counseling practice.
A counseling practice.
A therapy.
Uh-huh. You know, those are so close together. I can see how you could combine them on one page and be able to do that very well in the summary area of your page. I could really see how those two could work in conjunction. However, I do understand that there is a nice bold line between counseling and coaching.
Yeah.
And so if for you that bold line means that you want, well, let me ask this. Do you have a website separate for each of these lines of your profession? Like, do you have a coaching website and a coaching counseling site?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Do you have even one website at this point? Are you still working on that?
Yeah, still working on it.
Okay.
The therapy website, I've never really had. I've always just done LinkedIn. I get most of my
mm-hmm.
clients word of mouth, client
uh-huh.
referral at this point.
Okay. Okay.
So I don't really feel a need for that one.
Right.
Coaching is newer.
Is that one that you would consider a website for?
Right, yes.
Okay. I think given that what you've just told me, I would retract what I said. And I think when you create your website for your coaching practice, I would do those two things separately, and I would create a LinkedIn using your website address, because once you create a website, then you can create your email address at that website like I have, tj@pinkpigeonmedia. You'll be able to do the same thing when you create a website for your coaching practice, and I would create a separate LinkedIn just because of that bold line between the two. And you've got a therapy practice that's already going, right? It's already an established practice.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
Then I really wouldn't want to mess with that. I would want to keep those two things separately if I were in your shoes and create a separate one with a website for your coaching. And if you don't need one for the counseling, then that's great, and keep LinkedIn going. It's separate direction with the counseling is what I would do.
Okay. And when you do that, when you have two LinkedIn pages, do you just have two pages under your name?
Well, see, the way that you create a separate one is by having a separate email address, and that's going to differentiate. But you'll have, you know, you'll be able to say your name and then coaching or however you want to name it. So I would suggest treating it as two separate entities. And, yes, you still use your name because you want to be found that way.
Mm-hmm.
However, you'll want to distinguish in your name between the counseling and the coaching.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So in your title, you may have your name and then the word coaching, and maybe it's relationship coaching, whatever you specialize in,
mm-hmm.
on your coaching page, and then your therapy page as separate with your name on it, but with your title of what you do in there. So they're differentiated in that way. And the real key here is the email address, because if you can't use the same email address, or LinkedIn will say, I've already got an account with this LinkedIn with this email address. So that's why to do it, you have to have a separate email address.
Okay. All right. Good.
And thanks for that question. That's a good question. Thank you.
Thank you.
That looks to be it for now, Tracy.
Okay. Fabulous. Well, I have enjoyed this. And as always, if you have any questions, I'd love for you to email me, or if you have feedback for this particular session, I would love to know what you got out of it, if you found it valuable, if there were things missing. And I can be emailed at tj@pinkpigeonmedia.com. And I'd love for you to visit my website and get my ebook on keywords, because I know without a doubt that it will be very helpful to you in trying to find out how your potential clients are thinking when they're Googling people like you. It's a great way to get out of your skin and into theirs to figure out how they're trying to find you. And that can be found at pinkpigeonmedia.com. And I want to say thank you and Happy New Year. I've enjoyed this, and I would love to talk with you if you need any help getting your LinkedIn pages and need any deeper stuff. Just give me a shout at tj@pinkpigeonmedia.com. And we can set up a time to talk, and I'd love to help you. So thanks, all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks.